Okay, I got that. All right, I've got my iPad up here, hidden away, kind of lower on my so I can read my notes while I talk. And the talk class today is about belonging. My name is I introduced myself before, but didn't say much about me. I'm Katie Larcell. I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister and a member of Right Way Zen, and I joined like 2 years ago, I think, right in the middle of the pandemic, and I've just found it to be a real source of inspiration and belonging, actually. So why did I pick belonging as my topic? Belonging is kind of a spiritual obsession of mine. It started when I was listening to the radio in my car on my way to Salem from Portland, which is a kind of a longish drive, and it was June 26th of 2013. The Supreme Court had just made gay marriage the law of the land, and OPB was interviewing couples getting married at Portland City Hall. And they were excited and they were laughing and they were crying. It was really a wonderful thing to listen to. And the one of the reporters asked that classic question, "What are you feeling right now? How are you feeling right now?" They always ask that. And this one woman says, and she's crying. And she's saying, "I feel like I finally belong. I finally belong here in the United States. Before, I didn't feel that I even belonged here. Now I belong." And I was just, maybe it was the emotion, everything, but it really struck me hard hearing that woman say out loud how she felt about where she belonged. And just how fragile our sense of belonging is at times, and that things like, I wouldn't have at that point in time, which was not that long ago, really. So I'd lived a good deal of my life. I still didn't realize what how wounding some of the things that happen are, and that they could actually affect your sense of belonging. So 2013 was before I became a Buddhist, and it was just before I was ordained as a Unitarian Universalist minister. And ever since, I've been interested in belonging and what it means for us as spiritual beings. So let's start with a definition. And I like this definition because it's very kind of homey, and it's by the Cambridge Dictionary. A feeling of being happy or comfortable as part of a particular group and having a good relationship with the other members of the group because they welcome you and accept you. I like it, but I also think belonging is one of those nuanced concepts that can cover a lot of different emotional situations, from do I belong in my skin? Do I belong in this country? The relations between individual people, married couples, and people and how they feel in different groups all through their day, actually, neighbors and families. There are a lot of places to belong to. Now, with Buddhism and belonging, that's you may have, especially those of you who have been Buddhist for a while, you may have been thinking that, that's not a word I hear. That's not one of those Buddhist words that you hear all the time, like compassion or enlightenment. I don't believe the Buddha ever talked about belonging. And of course, someone may correct me. They may know more than I do about what the Buddha said. So one of the things I did was I did a search on the Buddhist website Tricycle, and I didn't turn up much. Now, the Buddha did endorse friendship, especially admirable friendship. He said, I love the way the Buddha talks in these sutras and things. The friend who is a helpmate, the friend in happiness and woe, the friend who gives good counsel, the friend who sympathizes too. These four as friends, the wise behold and cherish them devotedly, as does a mother her own child. So he, you know, friendship is akin to belonging. You know, you belong to your friends. And of course, but I wanted to also shout out about the Buddha honored the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And Sangha's right there. The three treasures is not an obscure teaching. And it's really one of my very favorite, actually. It's so simple, and it's so clear, and it sets Buddhism up so well. It honors our founder, the teachings that we honor and learn from as a body of work, and then the human community. And that's, you know, really almost inherent in talking about our human community. You're talking about the qualities of emotion and connection that should be part of that. I think belonging is an important part of any human community, and especially a spiritual community. And at Brightway, I assume, and I'm not on the board or anything like that, but I assume we want people to feel a strong sense of belonging. Because when you belong, you are at ease. When you belong, you are happy. And we want everyone to be happy. That's part of Buddhism. Now, in contemporary Buddhism, the expert on belonging is the teacher Sabini. Darn it, I had that name figured out before. Sabini Selassie. She does come up on tricycle. I have already read her book, and I put her book and a couple others in the chat, and I'm not sure what to do for the dirt zendo on that, but you know, I can always send that to you. She does come up on tricycle, and I've already read her book, You Belong. I read it quite a while ago, and it was also one of the inspirations for this talk, and I draw from it quite a bit. Sabini Selassie is a Buddhist teacher. I can't figure out her lineage. In her acknowledgement, she thanks Joseph Goldstein and Sharon Salzberg for early support. So I think I would just call her a contemporary American Buddhist, because they are kind of on the flagship of American Buddhism. On her book jacket, she characterizes herself as a nerdy black immigrant tomboy Buddhist weirdo. So I'm going to say that again in case you missed it. She characterizes herself as a nerdy black immigrant tomboy Buddhist weirdo. Now, each one of those words provides a way to feel different from the great mainstream of America, to feel you have every opportunity with every one of those words to feel like you do not belong. In addition, she is a cancer survivor. And while she was in treatment for cancer as a young woman in her 20s, she felt isolated and alone. She was obsessed by the idea of belonging because she always felt like she didn't fit naturally anywhere. She writes, "Into my 30s, I assumed there was a certain ways to belong. I did not seem to get them. I was too blackish for the white folks, not black enough for the black folks, too Americanized to get my roots, too immigrant to get American idioms, too feminist for heels, too femme not to do my eyebrows, too intellectual for the intuitives, not sufficiently well-read for the academy, too political for my party friends, not radical enough for my activist friends, too hetero to call myself queer, too queer to care about most hetero nonsense, too woo-woo for the skeptics, not spiritual enough for the renunciates. I had too much money or not enough. So she loved and taught Buddhism, but sometimes didn't feel a sense of belonging in Buddhist spaces. People would say strange things to her as she took up the role of teacher because she was young and she was a black and probably other things, all those other things that I read before. So she began to tackle the feeling of not belonging through Buddhism. And so it's kind of a new way. I mean, it's a new way of looking at it, I would say. Judging from what I saw on Tricycle, she's kind of the one that talks about it. The first Buddhist principle she applied to belonging was the doctrine of two truths, the absolute or ultimate truth of interconnectedness and the relative or conventional truth of difference. So, I mean, I'm sure you've heard that before. I always find myself grasping a little bit at some of these long sentences. So I'm going to say it again. The absolute or ultimate truth of interconnectedness and the relative or conventional truth of difference. So I know you've probably run into that concept before. So what she says is belonging flourishes within this paradox. Everything is connected, yet everything is experienced as separate. Says we all belong. We all belong. That's axiomatic. That is Buddhism in a nutshell. We just don't always feel it. That feeling of not belonging. Frankly, I think everyone here listening to me can say that it is a special kind of dukkha. On the savannah where our natures evolved, belonging to your tribe was the only way to stay alive. Getting pushed out of the tribe and you were a goner. When we don't feel we belong, we feel it in that primal way of something that's embedded in our nature. And the suffering of not belonging can also be fed by our upbringings. So it's, you know, that's like the first layer, just our nature. But then the second layer is when there's a whole science of how we attach to our parents as babies and children. Some of us attach pretty well, but a lot of us learn to be wary, and some of us become neurotic from inconsistent parenting. And when we get into a group and we feel that feeling of disconnection, those who were wounded by their attachment that was perhaps not as complete or as perfect as we would all like, they feel it more. It's another style of primal wound that we can feel again and again. It's again, a special kind of dukkha. So, and then the third layer, so that's the second layer kind of squashed on, and the third layer is attachment theory as a source of beyond attachment theory as a source of separateness is the effects of racism and sexism and just human comparison. We go on guard against prejudice if we have, you know, skin color or perhaps a woman in a situation where she's the only woman in a like an engineering firm or something. Actually as an older person now, I'm starting to run into a little of that myself. So we know people are evaluating us too. Even everyone feels that. Because we know that because we do it ourselves, we evaluate others. So that's like, I would say that was the third layer of dukkha. So as a result of that, there is a great difference between people in how easily they feel a sense of belonging. This is truly an area where people differ. One thing to watch for is that you may not be able to use your own experience to tell how another person is feeling, because you may have more sensitivity to not belonging, or you may always feel like you belong everywhere. Some people are like that. They just feel like they belong everywhere. But after reflecting a little bit on this, I realized that there's like this social justice component to this emotion. And that's kind of interesting, isn't it? There's a such social justice component. So people who have more secure backgrounds, who are more part of the mainstream, are going to most likely feel more of a sense of belonging than people who don't have that. So it's just something to think about. I thought it was kind of interesting. So that's just the background on a Buddhist kind of a Buddhist take and a little bit of science on belonging. And then let's go back to 7A and what she says about it. And just to give everybody a break here, let me ask a question. She has sort of a pathway that she follows in her book, and it and there there's let's see, one, two, three, four, five different sections. One is ground yourself, know yourself, love yourself, connect yourself, and be yourself. So that's obviously there's a theme going on there. So let's go back to the very beginning of that and look at ground yourself. And I just want to ask, after, if you're sitting there thinking about belonging a little bit as I've talked, why do you think grounding would help with belonging, with a sense of belonging? Did I stump everyone?
Maybe
John?
is that a general question out for public answer?
It's a general question for a public answer.
Okay. Well, I'd like to say that in America, we're not a healthy culture. And our sense of stability and uncertainty is out there all the time, no matter what our background or is. And by grounding ourselves, we stay relatively stable, healthy. That's a basic question for counselors. Are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating well? Because when we're not doing those basic things, we're not making good choices, no matter what our age group is or our surroundings. Thanks.
Thanks, Ruthann. Yeah. Anybody else, Jinro?
I was gonna say, and this is from my own experience. If I am grounded, there's a pretty good chance that I have a sense of who I am. Now, I may not have that sense in the Buddhist sense of the word. I'm still working on that for the theme. But I have had the experience of growing up and in my youth feeling like I didn't fit anywhere. And once I had a clear picture of who I was, and I found people who were like me in a particular way, I felt like I belonged. I felt like a drop of water just flowing into a pond. So I think knowing who you are might be helpful.
Thanks, Jinro. Tyler, did you want to say something?
I'll be quick. I think it's kind of similar that if we're coming into a new space and we want to belong or looking for a feeling of belonging, as much as we need other people to take us in, we also need to be willing to put ourselves out there to to be a part of that community. And I think to be able to do that, yeah, it works better when we have a, when we have a firm grounding of who we think we are. And that could just be like, I think like, not necessarily permanently, like it's just sometimes like you're not in a good space mentally, you're having a tough day, like it's hard, you're not grounded just in that moment, and you can't, it's not that you don't in the larger scheme of things know who you are, but just if you're regulated, grounded, those sorts of things, then you can put yourself out there safely and to let other people kind of know who you are. But if you're having an off day, just you can just, it's hard to put yourself out there in that way.
Yeah, that's really true. Yeah, okay. So let me share with you what Sebane was talking about. She started off by, when it came to grounding, she was very literal about it. She was talking about belonging only happens through the body. So she has a couple of quotes from the Buddha about the body. And one of them is very short. There is a body. And there's one that is kind of a favorite quote too. And then there's another one. There is one thing that when cultivated and regularly practiced leads to deep spiritual intention, to peace, to mindfulness, and clear comprehension, to vision and knowledge, to a happy life here and now, and to the culmination of wisdom and awakening. And what is that one thing? It is mindfulness centered on the body. So, yeah, so she is big on getting in touch with, and especially when you meditate, being very clear that you're thinking, but your focus is on the body. So how much time do I have? Oh my goodness. I had wanted to share with you something that I use, and this came from Willa Blythe Baker. She's another Buddhist teacher. She's a Lama in the Tibetan tradition. And she uses the word ground when she meditates. And she goes, you know, the G stands for ground, which means straight connecting with the earth. And the R stands for relax. A lot of these things will sound a bit like the instructions for meditation that we use, that we just recently started using before meditation at Brightway. But it's nice because it's just one word, ground. So G stands for ground, R for relax, O stands for open to your senses, your sense experiences, and your inner knowing. U means untangle, which means explore your difficult feelings through your body, you know. And then N is nurture at, you know, I think you can run that nurture all the way through the whole thing, but it's basically you're giving yourself love and you're feeling the love for the world. And then D, the last one, is dissolve the separateness. And to tell you the truth, I use that, I sneak it into Zazen, in my Zazen, but I basically get to about O usually. It's I have yet to make it to dissolve. So anyway, I thought I'd share that with you. So then the next thing that you would do after grounding, which is like grounding in the body. So and part of this is I'm using a word, belonging, that has a really strong connotation in the social world. She's also talking about the belonging, the Buddhist belonging of belonging to everything, you know. So that's why she starts with the body. So know yourself. Why would this help with belonging? I think that's fairly self-evident. I just wanted to share with you that she used that Dogen quote, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of enlightenment remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. And her big recommendation on knowing yourself is to go on retreats. So I'm going to back up Jinryu on this one. She says you need, that's the, that kind of extended time is a way to help with getting to know yourself. Oh, and she, I have a little quote here that I thought was kind of funny. Every retreat, I ask myself the same question. How can I be so completely fascinated by myself and so utterly sick of myself, almost in the exact same moment? I spend most of my time in meditation thinking about me. Also, I complain about me to me. I like to think of this as the narcissistic paradox of practice. So, if that may, maybe someone out there perhaps can relate to that. So, anyway, the other thing she brings up about knowing yourself is knowing where your people come from. And that kind of, for me, that came out of left field. But as I think about it and study that idea, I'm much more interested in it. Knowing what your genealogy is, like we in Buddhism, we honor our ancestors. So, and that is one of the things, like Ruth Ann was saying, you know, our culture is, has some hard, a lot of hard places in it. And one of them is that we jettison our ancestors in American culture. So anyway, that's an interesting thing. So then the next thing would be to love yourself and a lot of people find that a little difficult. Maybe sounds a little woo-woo, but I think it's, I actually brought an exercise. I think I have time to do it. Yeah, I think I have time to do it. So is anyone familiar with Kristen Neff? She's a social scientist and she studies self-love. And there's this one practice is very simple. I thought I'd give you a taste of what it feels like to do a little self-love exercise. So are you guys all game to do that? Or do you want me to keep going? Okay, you're game to do that. Okay, so this is called a tender self-compassion break. And I mean, I was going to ask you how you thought self-love would impact belonging, your sense of belonging. But I don't think I have enough time to take all that, but be thinking about that. Why would that impact self-love? You know, why would that do that? So think of something. Think of something right now, some part of your life where things are not going so well and you think you might actually be responsible for it, or maybe you didn't handle it well, or, you know, it just, you know, it's sticky, it's icky, there's something there. Think about something like that. I know I should give you 2 hours to do this because I'm sure you can't think of anything. But, okay, so now, has everyone thought of something? You don't have to say what it is. I won't make you do that. Okay, so then the first thing to do, the first phase is meant to help you be mindfully present with the pain you experience. So you're supposed to say to yourself slowly and calmly, this is a moment of suffering. Now, the second phrase is designed to remind you of how you are connected to humanity. Try saying to yourself, I'm not alone. Another way to put it would be, we all face challenges in our lives, all of us. And then the third part calls on the power of love and kindness. Put your hand over your heart or any place on your body that feels like it needs to be touched, needs to be comforted. And say, may I be kind to myself. May I understand and be patient with myself. And that's it. It's something, you know, something you can call on to help you feel more connected to the world and connected to yourself. And it uses mindfulness, your connection with common other people, common humanity, and kindness. So it feels like a very Buddhist practice, even though it came out of a science lab. So I thought, and it looks like I'm just right on time, Paul. I was thinking that it might be nice to do a breakout, because I've been just talking and talking and talking. And we could do a breakout. And what I'd like to ask you is to talk about what kinds of things and how you connect with, not with yourself, with other people, with the world, with the rocks and the trees, with the sky. It, you know, just let yourself think about what is it you do that helps you feel that sense of connection. And I think that could be a nice thing to talk about with each other.
All right, I'll invite you to rooms and then we'll shoot for 10 minutes.
Meetings. I was watching, I wasn't in one, which I kind of liked because I was kind of like recovering, but but I could see people in the dirt zendo and they were all gesturing and stuff. And I was like, oh, good. So I was liking that. So does anybody want to say what happened or what people talked about in their groups?
We are back. We're all back. Well, I'll just say briefly, we all had similar interests, and all three of us, I think, feel a sense of connection when we're in our gardens, when we're outside in nature. And then I know that I and another in our group, I think maybe all three of us, had a particular interest in reading. And I know personally for myself that I feel connected to what's out there, connected to possibilities of other people when I'm reading. And then we talked about connection with friends, loved ones, and people in our communities and staying in touch.
Thank you, Jinru. How about the dirt zendo? Does anybody want to report in from the dirt zendo? There we go.
We had some interesting discussions. There was a mix of I feel really connected, or someone said I feel really connected during, you know, silent retreats and meditation, which is so interesting because we're not talking to each other And yeah, how do we feel so connected? And I've heard other people say that. Like, I think it was Jinryu at the last Zazen Kai I went to who said, wow, it really felt like family during our break when we were all sitting in the lobby and someone was crocheting and someone was reading and we were all just kind of like sitting silently doing our own thing together. And then another person said, well, I feel really connected when I have these opportunities, even if it's really short, just to have a short conversation with somebody, just some like one-on-one time with a family member, but conversation was a big part of it. And so I love that both of those things on either end of the spectrum kind of brought up, were brought up. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else?
I'll say something real quick that just hasn't been mentioned yet is the role of like pets in our life. And so feeling connection to the animals in our life. So just like the connection between us and, you know, whether cats or dogs, or we're talking about chickens, like all the different ways that we can feel connected to the animals in our life. And then someone else mentioned how animals, you know, taking their animal out for a walk is a huge help in allowing them to feel connected to other people. And it's a conversation starter. And when the dog, you know, when their dog's there, they're more likely to find connection when they're just out and about in community. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. I've heard that before too. Thanks, Tyler. That's a good one. Yeah. Did anybody say anything about ancestors? I thought I'd bring it up again because I have it on my screen. And it's kind of one of the things that came from Sebane's book that I wouldn't have thought of on my own. And I was kind of intrigued by it. And I haven't really, don't really have, I did a couple of years ago, we had some deaths in my family and it was during COVID and everything. And we set up a big altar at my house. It was right around the Day of the Dead. And, we just put all these pictures up and stuff and we all came masked and everything. But it was really kind of neat. It was really special. So. Go ahead.
We didn't say anything about that in our little breakout group, but I really appreciated it when you brought that up a few minutes ago. I know that in my own practice, because of the way we revere our ancestors in Zen Buddhism, I begin to think of my parents and the people before them in that ancestral way, as opposed to just my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me in that when I began to remember the stories I was told growing up, of who did what and where grandparents came from and where great grandparents came from and what they did and the stories of their lives, I began to see the karma that was passed down to me. And I appreciate, I was able to be more forgiving of my parents because of the things they did that I didn't particularly appreciate. Well, let's get clear. The things they did that I did not like, there was a reason for that and it had to do with their karma. So has been and continues to be a very interesting exercise in my understanding them and myself, and an exercise in being comfortable with who they were.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jenna. Does anyone else want to get any last? It looks like we're really almost done. I'm just noticing it's almost 9 o'clock. Is there any last words anyone would like to say? Some insight that they had or anything like that? Don't want to shut anyone down. Yeah, there we go.
I'll say something again. as a woman in civil engineering, I really appreciated your talk. Thank you so much. As I prepared for the three talks that I've done, Everything, as I pick away the layers and really sink into the topics, I really just always boils down to equality for me. And so clearly it's very important. It's a very strong personal experience that I've had throughout studying Buddhism. And I think it's a parallel discussion, equality with belonging. And you brought it up quite a bit in your talk. And when I was learning about my Zen under capitalism, or kind of sinking into that, one of the things that I learned was that the Buddha created the Sangha kind of in protest of the caste system. And so that is very much of like, you belong here, everybody belongs here. Because imagine feeling, you know, like being an untouchable and not in that sense of not belonging. So I just thought that would be an interesting little tidbit to bring up.
Right. Yeah. No, actually, I appreciate that. Well, I think our time is drawing to an end here. So let's see. I have it at the end here. Okay. So I enjoyed being able to share tonight, and I hope, you know, y'all had a good evening, thoughtful evening. And so we offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so they may be able to attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Great talk, Katie.
Thank you, Jim.